Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you're here as in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
One. When I'm working out, I love to listen to your podcast.
Whenever you say something, other people react to it.
Taking my breath away, Aaron.
Fern Lundquist joins me. Hall of Famer Jim Calhoun. NASCAR icon Dale Earnhardt Jr. Kirk Herbstreit is on the phone.
Episode 763
of the podcast, and assuming America, the Outdoor Sports Podcast presented by Betfred Sportsbook. It is Thursday, June 1st, 2023. People, I hope everybody's doing well. I hope everybody is having a great day. By the way, I hope our number one listener, my mom, is having a happy birthday. Happy birthday, Mom. I will not share your age, I promise. And I hope you're ready for a jam-packed Thursday episode of the Aaron Torres Sports Podcast, third episode in 3 days, because so much stuff has had to happen, and this is the most loaded show that we've had to date. So today, we are going to talk NBA draft deadline. It was chaos in the college hoop streets, big day at UConn, Arkansas, Kentucky, Purdue, Creighton, Villanova, Illinois, on and on. We're going to talk about all the big news. From there, we will take a quick break. Remember, conference meetings are going on right now. We had meetings in the SEC. Nick Saban said some very interesting stuff. And the Big 12. I am here to tell you, I'm going to share some insight on the Big 12, some expansion stuff that you will not hear anywhere else. So make sure to stay tuned. Make sure to pay attention. Make sure you are ready to go. We are loaded to the wall, you know, from the window to the wall. Till sweat, you know, we're not going to go there. But we got a jam-packed show. Let's get into it. Let's not waste any more time. And let's get to the topic of the day. Topic of the day. You do not need me to tell you. Wednesday was the NBA draft deadline. If you care about college hoops, you know all about it, okay? It was basically the day in which, if you wanted to return to college basketball, if you were testing the NBA draft wars and you wanted to return to college basketball, you had to go ahead and do it and make your announcement by end of day Wednesday, midnight Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific. And when I tell you it was a wild day, crazy day, it was an insane day. Started before 9 a.m. Eastern with Tristan Newton from UConn announcing he was going to return. Went all the way up till right around midnight Eastern with the final name or two. It was a crazy day, and it's time to react. And so there was so much to peel back. There was so much to discuss. I want to do winners and losers. I think Zach Edey is probably the most notable name from the day, but I want to get to the biggest story. I'm a story guy. I'm a narrative guy. I'm a topic guy. And I want to start with the biggest loser. And the biggest loser is a program that we've talked about a lot. If you're not a fan of Kentucky basketball, forgive me, but this is the biggest story in college sports right now. As Kentucky, it has been just a disastrous offseason. For those of you who have not paid attention, I've kind of talked about it a few times. But here is what has happened at Kentucky over the last couple months, okay? Lose to Kansas State in the second round of the NCAA tournament. From there, you have the normal, you know, mechanisms, what they call machinations, whatever you want to call it, of the offseason. Couple guys declare for the draft. Couple guys enter the portal. Couple guys test the NBA draft waters. And so what you were left with coming into the draft deadline was a very thin roster, as Kentucky has essentially, I don't want to say they've sat out of the transfer market because they went after Hunter Dickinson, they went after Keyshawn Johnson, but I didn't think they were aggressive enough. We're going to get to that in a minute. And what Kentucky was left with coming into the deadline day was this: a five-man high school recruiting class that admittedly is very good, number one class in the country, four top 10 players, probably three lottery picks in DJ Wagner, Aaron Bradshaw, and Justin Edwards. So it's not a complete disaster. But outside of those five freshmen, you have one redshirt freshman, Ogana Onyenso, who played in one SEC game this year, and you have a true sophomore, Adu Thiero, who, as I've said a few times, plays hard, like the kid, respect him, but he's probably a year away from being a real contributor. That is what Kentucky had coming into NBA draft deadline day, and that is why draft deadline day was so big for them. Three players were on the fence about coming back: the former National Player of the Year, Oscar Tshiebwe; Antonio Reeves, a sharpshooter, big game, 37 points in the regular season finale at Arkansas; Chris Livingston, a former five-star who had his moments but didn't really click. I'll be blunt, didn't really feel like Chris Livingston was ever planning on coming back. But going into the day, there was hopes that the other two would come back because none of the three are projected in most any major NBA mock draft. Well, here's the good news. Kentucky technically didn't go 0-3, but as my buddy Nick Roush, who covers football for Kentucky Sports Radio, joked, he said Kentucky went 1.5 of 3. Oscar Tshiebwe is staying in the NBA draft. Chris Livingston is staying in the NBA draft. Antonio Reeves announced he was going to come back, but did not commit to coming back to Kentucky. Now, reports, multiple people, Jack Pilgrim was the one I saw put it out there, is that he's maybe going to consider testing the waters, but it's really about NIL. It's about role. It's about making sure that Kentucky is right for him going forward. And by the way, he should look at all his options. That's perfectly okay. But with it, Kentucky was undoubtedly the biggest loser on the NBA draft deadline day. And more importantly, Kentucky has a very contentious situation with its roster going into next season. Now, we'll get to, I think there are one or two positives in a second. But what this comes down to, and it's something I've been talking about since early April. Remember, players can start entering the portal in mid-March now. And in early April, I noticed, I sent out a tweet April 5th. It was the day after I got home from the Final Four. I said, Kentucky is moving awfully slow in the transfer portal. And I had a ton of people, oh, Torres, you don't know what you're talking about. You have no sources. You're an idiot. You're this, you're that. And what I said was, listen, I'm not saying you have to have seven commitments lined up, but you cannot wait in the portal. You can't take a week, 10 days to evaluate a kid before, oh, I'm going to grace them with a Kentucky offer. That's not how the portal works. Kids move fast, schools move fast, commitments move fast, and you have to move fast with Kentucky. And so I said it on draft deadline day Wednesday, and I'm going to stand by it. The Arkansas approach to the portal is the way that you need to operate in 2023. Now, Eric Musselman, love the guy, takes it to an extreme, but Eric Musselman, when you see a list of every marquee portal player and Arkansas is on the list, understand, it's not a game, it's not a gimmick, it's not cute, it's not funny. What Eric Musselman is essentially doing is he is reaching out to everybody to get a feel for who's good, who's not, who might be interested, who isn't, who's about NIL, who wants to actually play, what's my good role going to be, all that good stuff. So that if anything happens, you have a backup plan. And if the backup plan falls through, you have a backup plan to a backup plan. And that's why they reach out to 75, 80, 90 kids. And it's also why their roster's largely set going into draft deadline day. If you play at Arkansas, you know, if I'm going to test the NBA draft waters, Coach Muss is going to recruit over me. And so I said 8 weeks ago, if you're Kentucky, you can't wait until the NBA draft deadline and hope good stuff happens. You have to move quicker. You have to get yourself settled. And I just believe this has been a train wreck of a situation at Kentucky. Now, what I would say about that is this, is that, a couple things. One, it falls on Cal. There's no other way to it. There's nothing else to put it, but it has been a train wreck. You cannot wait. You cannot wait until the end of May to try and figure out what works, what doesn't, what's good, what's not, what's this, what's that. You have to have answers. You have to have backup plans to backup plans, and you cannot wait. And so I bring it up because, listen, I don't know how much longer the Calipari era is going to go on. I have a saying on this show. I don't call for Cal's job because ultimately at the end of the day, most years he's going to have you in contention and in position. I know the last couple of years have been disappointing, but it doesn't change the fact that most seasons things are actually not in terrible shape. And so I bring it up because, listen, this is kind of a come-to-you-know-what moment for Kentucky basketball. If Calipari continues after next season, and right now there's no indication that he's going to step away, you have to have a different approach in the portal. You have to move quicker. You have to think quicker. You have to evaluate quicker. I'll be blunt. Not only do you have to evaluate quicker, let's take it a step further. You have to, in some cases, know about guys that are going to enter the portal before they enter the portal. I've said it many times. If you are waiting until the draft deadline to evaluate a player, to reach out to a player, to even know, if you're waiting for a player to enter the portal before you evaluate him or are even aware of who he is, you're too far behind. There are guys that are entering the portal that already know where they want to go, that know where they want to visit, that have it down to one or two schools. You cannot wait. And so I'm not going to go on. And what I will say is, from Kentucky's perspective, I do think there are a few positives. One, I think ultimately you're going to get Antonio Reeves back. That is a positive, end of story, no doubt about it. Beyond that, I would also say, listen, criticize a lot, but a couple things. The freshmen, Calipari's best teams have always been a ton of freshmen and NBA talent at the freshman spot, specifically at the point guard spot. DJ Wagner is that, and I believe that DJ Wagner can put Kentucky in a position to have success next year alongside Justin Edwards, who I think will be really good. And last thing on Kentucky, there is one positive, and that is that Arthur Kaluma, who I believe is the best player in the portal still, announced that he is withdrawing from the NBA draft and has decided that he will come back to college but enter the transfer portal. 13.5 points per game, didn't hit enough three-pointers, but this is an NBA-type talent. And Jeff Borzello put out a list of schools that he's considering, and Kentucky is very high up on that list. For Kentucky, this listen, no more excuses. You got to go get this guy. And don't tell me about your NIL, because here's the thing, right? I hear Kentucky fans say, oh, our NIL, we're behind in our AD this and Calipari that. NIL isn't affecting the football program. It's not. So don't tell me it's about NIL. If it's about playing with freshmen, you got to figure out a way. And Kaluma is the one guy. He wants to be a one and done. He doesn't want to be in college. He wants to go to a place where he can ball out, have success, go pro, get drafted. If you're Kentucky, you got to get him. And then you got to find some other guys in the portal as well. Because what I will say is, yes, it's late, but you can still find role players in the portal. And don't tell me nobody wants to be a role player. Don't tell me that nobody wants to be a role player. At the end of the day, I still believe that for Kentucky, there are players you can get. I'm a UConn alum, Joey Calcaterra, if you remember, key part of the national championship team. He didn't commit until last year in late June, early July. So there are still guys. He played a role. He was important. Kentucky, you've got to move. You've just got to move. You cannot wait. Let's get to some of the other.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, let's get to some other NBA draft deadline news and notes. And listen, little glasses half empty to start the show. So let's get to some positives. And I don't think there was a single program anywhere in college basketball that had a better day than, of all teams, might be a little bit surprising, the Creighton Blue Jays. So we talked about Creighton on Monday's show, but this is a program that made the Elite Eight They did have some offseason stuff happen. I just referenced Arthur Kaluma is in the transfer portal, as was their starting point guard, Ryan Nemhart. But it was a team that kind of was up and down all year, but had two really, really good, really, really important players that were testing the NBA draft waters up until the end of Memorial Day weekend. Now, the first big piece of news they got was on Monday, and it was a great piece of news on Memorial Day. Ryan Kalkbrenner, a 7'1" center, 16 points per game, 6 rebounds, 2.5 blocks per game, all Big East first team. I think you can legitimately argue that he might be the best two-way center in college basketball in terms of offensive prowess, but also defensive as well. He ends up announcing that he's coming back on Monday, which set up big things on Wednesday when Trey Alexander, a guard who averaged 13 points per game on 42-43% three-point shooting, his draft decision came down to the wire. And I'll be blunt, I spoke with somebody kind of close and kind of knows some things in that Creighton community. And they said, you know, we're not really expecting him back. If we do, it'd be incredible, but we don't think we're going to get him back. Well, about 9 p.m. Eastern time, the Creighton Blue Jays got the best news possible as Trey Alexander became the second of two key players to announce his return to Creighton. And let me just tell you this. The Blue Jays, as crazy as it sounds, I believe this is a team that is good enough to get to Phoenix for the 2024 Final Four, would be the first Final Four in school history. I believe they're a team that's good enough to cut down the nets in Phoenix as well. So what you need to know about Creighton, what I just said. First off, I think they got two all-Big East caliber type guys back over the last couple of days. Kalkbrenner, 7-footer, offense, defense. He changes the game on both ends. And Trey Alexander, the thing that I like about him, he is a guy that can play on the ball. He can play off the ball. He was actually forced into kind of a point guard-ish role two seasons ago because of injuries. But when he plays off the ball, 14 points per game, 40% three-point shooting. And again, this was a guy that I think could have been drafted had he stayed in the NBA draft. Instead, he'll come back. Creighton is already getting back Baylor Shireman, fifth-year guy, played last year at Creighton, had a really good year after transferring from South Dakota State. And they've added a couple players from the portal, most notably a kid named Steve Ashworth, who was the best player on Utah State, which made the NCAA tournament as well. So when it comes to Creighton, listen, they don't have a ton of depth. They're not a team that's going to go 8, 9, 10 deep. But they do have a starting five as good as anybody in college basketball. And again, this is a team that I believe will be good enough to compete at the highest level. I'd also add, no disrespect to Kaluma, no disrespect to Ryan Nemhart, but I do wonder if there were some chemistry issues in that locker room, chemistry issues, which I think will be better next year. Let's stick with a big winner of Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon. And how about the Purdue Boilermakers? And Purdue, we've talked about it again and again and again. It was really only one player testing. That player, though, was a big one. Literally, figuratively, metaphorically, Zach Edey, your national player of the year. It came down to the wire, and as I said a couple days ago, I was surprised how seriously Zach Edey took this NBA draft process. I thought he was going to test. I thought he was going to just kind of feel it out, talk to some NBA teams. He took it right down to the wire, but again, about 9 p.m. Eastern time, announces that he is going to return to Purdue. And so I can't even explain in the college basketball hierarchy how important this is for a few reasons. One, listen, you guys and girls know I'm not Mr. Purdue. I've been more critical of Matt Painter, I think, than anybody in the college basketball media. But at the same time, we can pretend that this program is a total, like they were still the Big Ten regular season champs. They were still the Big Ten tournament champs. And now they return all five starters off that team that was basically in the top five from about late November on. And so I'm not here to tell you that this is going to be the first year. They're going to win a national championship. They're going to do everything that every Purdue team has failed to do. They are coming off a couple disappointing seasons, but it doesn't change the fact that, in my opinion, they are good enough to win it all. And what I would also say, by the way, I'm not saying they will. I'm just saying they're good enough. What I would also say, I think this is a big win for college basketball. We're going to, later on in the show, talk about some comments that Nick Saban had on NIL and the state of college football. But at the same time, while NIL is wreaking chaos and everyone's trying to figure things out, what you also can't deny, it's keeping great college athletes in college sports for longer than ever before. I know I just talked about Oscar Tshiebwe leaving, but at the same time, keep in mind, he was a National Player of the Year that at this time last year decided to come back and play a second year at Kentucky, a fourth year of college basketball overall. I can't tell you how big that is for the sport of college basketball. I can't tell you how big it is for the sport of college basketball to have Zach Edey returning this year as well. And so I could go on and on, but this is great for the sport. This is great for Purdue. And again, not saying they're going to win the national title, but I think they certainly can. One team, I don't know what to say other than, you know, it was a little bit of a toss-up for the Arkansas Razorbacks. You know, listen, Eric Musselman, we just talked about it a minute ago. There are always a lot of moving parts in his program. It was a very interesting day, to say the least. Let's get to the good and the bad for Arkansas. First of all, the good. By the way, good, bad, and unexpected, I think, is the right way to put it for Arkansas. The good, you got back Devo Davis. This is a veteran guy. How about this? This is a guy that has been there for 4 years. So everybody says, oh, Eric Musselman, guy's coming in and out. He will be in his fourth year next year. He will be trying to make the NCAA tournament's second weekend for the fourth time in 4 years. He was a big part of their Elite Eight team in 2021, hit the game-winning shot against Oral Roberts to send Arkansas to the Elite Eight that year, was part of the team that made the Elite Eight in 2022, and then, of course, this year's Sweet 16 team as well. And so for Arkansas, I know it's all about the new guys. It's always going to be that way in college basketball. We get excited about the portal guys, the freshmen, the whatever. But bringing back a veteran who has been in this program, you cannot put a price on it. And I already liked Arkansas. Adding him back, I just think further solidifies them, in my mind, as a top 10 team. Not going to go through their whole roster because we've done it a million times this offseason. But Trevin Brazil, I believe, is an all-SEC type guy. And then just a ton of talent out of the portal. Five different players, five guards, a bunch of guys who can put the ball in the basket. L. Ellis from Louisville, Khalif Battle from Temple, Keon Menefield from Washington, and of course, Tremont Mark from Houston. I would also add, talk about an elite defensive backcourt. Devo Davis, Tremont Mark are both individually as good as anybody. So that was a big win for Arkansas. A big loss was that Jordan Walsh, former five-star McDonald's All-American, decided to leave. That really isn't surprising, so I don't want to spend too much time on it. What I do want to spend a little bit of time on, Ron Holland. So we've talked so much about Ron Holland on this show over the last month, and with good reason. Number one high school player in America, was committed to Texas, decommits from Texas in late April. And I said that day, I said, it's either going to be Arkansas or G League Ignite, the professional route. Well, what I can tell you is that the Arkansas staff felt very confident. It's not from them, but you know, you hear things through the grapevine. I can tell you, they felt great about their position with Ron Holland right up until Wednesday morning, the day of the NBA draft deadline. My understanding was, yes, they were going to lose some guys, but they were going to announce Ron Holland on Wednesday or Thursday, and they were going to be good to go and roll into the season. And so I bring it up because Wednesday morning, you just start to hear these rumblings really quick that G League Ignite has upped its offer, that G League Ignite is going to pay Ron Holland more money than people ever expected, and Ron Holland ultimately committed to G League Ignite. Now, from the player perspective, I'll just say this. I wish him the best. I'm never going to begrudge any kid for taking an alternate route to college basketball. College isn't for everybody. Some guys want to be a professional and want to be developed in that manner. Totally get it. No disrespect to Ron Holland. And if the numbers that I was told are accurate, almost couldn't turn it down based on some of the numbers that I heard about the money that may have been offered. Also, not really worried about it from Arkansas perspective. He would have been a cherry on top of the sundae. But you also can't really sit here and say that Arkansas is in trouble. I think they're a top five team going into next year. I do want to say, though, and I've said this a few times, really quickly, give me 30 seconds for a tangent. I don't really get what G League Ignite's endgame is, okay? So if you remember, by the way, this isn't a criticism of the program. I've said it many times. Jason Hart runs the program. Great coach. Know him, West Coast, whatever. I bring it up because G League Ignite was initially a program that was installed as an alternate route to the NBA for college basketball. It was for players explicitly. They stated in their mission statement for players who did not want to play college basketball. And so it was never intended as a program that was going to get into bidding wars for players, and we're going to offer you this much more than that. Like, it was never intended to be that. And so I'm just a little confused as to what its function is. Now, if it's a developmental program for kids who don't want to play college basketball or international players who want a year before entering the NBA draft, I totally get it. But for the NBA to spend millions of dollars to recruit players who were going to go to college otherwise, I don't really get what the end game is. The NBA has a great feeder system in college basketball, and you have enough things to spend money on without spending tens of millions of dollars to run a developmental program for guys who ultimately want to go to college. So I wish Ron Holland nothing but the best. It's not a disrespect to him. Take your money, get the money that you can, but I just find it weird. It's one thing if a kid just says, I don't want to be a college basketball player, I need another route. But this kid wanted to go to college. This kid intended to go to college, and G League Ignite beat them to the punch. Let's get to a couple other winners and losers from the NBA draft deadline. One, let's go back to the Big East. Big winner, Tyler Burton, Richmond transfer, was in the NBA draft, ends up leaving the draft and committing to Villanova. And I'll just say this. I don't know how good Kyle Neptune is as a head coach, the head coach at Villanova. He took over for Jay Wright. They struggled last year. But this dude has cleaned up in the portal to the point that I just dropped my new way too early top 25. And for the first time, Villanova is in it. They have crushed the portal. TJ Bamba, Washington State's leading scorer, he is going to Villanova. This kid, Tyler Burton, 19 points per game at Richmond, all A-10 performer. He's going to Villanova. Beyond that, Hakeem Hart, really good player out of Maryland. He's going to Villanova. And then Lance Ware, remember that name from Kentucky, is going to Villanova as well. So you add them in with the returnees at Villanova. That is a loaded squad. That is a good squad. That is a top 20 squad in my mind. And I'll tell you, we're going to learn next year if Kyle Neptune can coach or not, because he has a squad that is good enough to win a lot of games. Really quickly, up and down day, I think, for my alma mater, UConn, but nothing really surprising. So Tristan Newton, who came on really strong, really late in the year, he averaged 19 points, he scored 19 points in the national championship game against San Diego State. He ended up announcing early in the day that he was coming back. He is a really important piece for UConn. 10 points per game, 4.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists per game. I think he's going to bring a veteran presence back to UConn. UConn now will return three really key players off last year's national championship team, him, Alex Caravan, Donovan Klingon. But UConn did lose. By the way, UConn also has a top three recruiting class in college basketball. UConn, however, did lose Andre Jackson, kind of the stalwart, do-it-all guy from that national championship team. Now, I'll be blunt. This had been expected for a while. Talk to somebody kind of close to the situation on Monday, Tuesday, something like that. They said, yeah, we don't expect him back. And all I could say is UConn's not surprised. To me, it doesn't affect UConn. I still think they're somewhere between the fourth or fifth best. They're a top 10 team, in my opinion, going into next year. But you look at Andre Jackson, the impact that he had on the program. This was a kid that committed to UConn after Dan Hurley's first year when UConn had lost a ton of games. All right, I take that back. After his second year before they had entered the Big East. So first year, they had a losing record. Second year, they struggled. But he came to UConn, committed after a losing season, and then came after a second season in which they would not have made the tournament in 2020. Leaves UConn, three NCAA tournaments, and a national champion. And I think I speak for a lot of UConn fans and alums when I say I wish him nothing but the best. By all accounts, a great kid, a great leader. I think he struggled with this decision. I think in his heart of hearts, he actually probably wanted to come back, but I think he also probably understood you're coming off a national championship. You are one of the best players in the tournament. Your stock is never going to be higher. Wish Andre Jackson nothing but the best. Finally, Illinois. And we talked a lot about Illinois over the last couple days, but Illinois had a heck of an NBA draft deadline, and here is why. They had two really good players that were testing as of Wednesday afternoon, and they got both of them back. Their leading scorer, Terrence Shannon Jr., TJ Shannon, 17 points per game. He announced that he would be coming back Coleman Hawkins, a do-it-all forward, announced he was going to be coming back as well. And with it, I think Illinois is probably right around a top 25 team. I had him at 26 in my poll that just dropped at Aaron Torres Online. I think probably if I had to do it over again, I may move them up a little bit, maybe somewhere into that 20 spot. Two veteran guys, a proven scorer. I think Illinois has a chance to be very, very, very good next season. So big day for them. Solid day, by the way, for UCLA. They got Adem Bona back. Thought that was an important piece for them. And I think that's it. I might have missed a guy or two. Reese Beekman going back to Virginia. I think that is a major, major, major piece for them. So credit to Virginia for landing him. But overall, I would say the biggest loser of the day undoubtedly was Kentucky. Probably the biggest winners, Creighton, Purdue. And I also think Illinois was a big winner. Shout out to Villanova as well. All right, so what I want to do, take a quick break. When I come back, I want to react to some of these conference meetings. The SEC had a meeting this week. Nick Saban said some really important stuff. Also, the Big 12, things are happening. Going to take a quick break. We'll discuss that. All right, we're getting back to the show in a minute. But before we do, I want to welcome back our presenting sponsor, Betfred Sportsbook, and the Betfred Sportsbook app. The NBA playoffs are here, and nobody has you covered quite like Betfred. By now, you know Betfred's story. Started in 1967 in the UK, over 1,200 shops in the UK. They have since come to the United States and made a major splash. They are not only the presenting sponsor of the Aaron Torres podcast and all things Aaron Torres media, but also the Cincinnati Bengals, the Colorado Rockies, the Denver Broncos. And what I love about Betfred Sportsbook is that nobody takes care of their customers quite like Betfred. You've seen the Betfred Sportsbook suite at Bengals games. It is hopping. We have sent listeners of this show to Denver Broncos VIP tailgates. Betfred bettors have thrown out first pitches at Colorado Rockies games. Again, nobody takes care of you like Betfred Sportsbook does. And here is what they are doing for the NBA playoffs. How about this for a deal? Bet $50 on any game, all playoffs long, get up to $1,111 in free bets. Here's how it works. Download the Betfred Sportsbook app, bet $50 on any game. You automatically get $111 in free bets. But beyond that, here is what else Betfred does for you. They're going to give you up to $200 in insurance for the first 5 weeks that you're a Betfred customer. So maybe you make a bad pick. We all do. We've all been there. Trust me, you followed my picks in March Madness. It happens. So you bet 200, doesn't work out. Get 200 insurance for the first 5 weeks that you are a Betfred customer, equating up to $1,111 in free bets thanks to Betfred. Again, nobody takes care of you like Betfred does. Love working with them. They are the presenting sponsor of the Aaron Torres pod. Tell them Torres sent you. Download the Betfred Sportsbook app right now. All right, everybody. Hi, back. Good to be back. Do want to switch gears. And, you know, it's kind of interesting, right? So we obviously just spent a lot of time talking about the NBA draft deadline, who's staying, who's going, what it means for college hoops in the 2023-2024 season. Why it's interesting, though, is because while that is the small picture of all things college sports, the bigger picture of college sports is starting to get shaped at the exact same time. What do I mean by that? It is that over the course of the last 2, 3, 4 days, and for the next 2, 3, 4 days going forward, both the SEC and the Big 12 are hosting their spring meetings. Coaches, administrators, school presidents, commissioners meeting together to kind of discuss the small picture stuff of college sports, the big picture stuff of college sports. And so what I want to do now is talk about what is going on at each of the locations, Destin, Florida for the SEC, and of course the Big 12 holding their meetings as well, because there is a lot of really important information coming out. For the SEC, I believe they are very much trying to shape the future of college sports and what it looks like. The Big 12 is in survival mode, expansion mode, and I want to get to both. Let's start with the SEC, because in my opinion, there are some very fascinating things going on in Destin, and it's not what you think. What you think the big story is right now in Destin is, oh, this 8-9 league game schedule in football, which we talked about on Monday's show. Do you go to 8 league games and keep one rival, or do you go to 9 league games and keep 3 rivals? That's all anybody wants to talk about. Just one problem. Kirby Smart said he doesn't really care. Greg Sankey said he didn't really care. And ultimately, my belief is that what we are going to see is that we are going to have a transition year of 2024 where the league probably only plays 8 league games. But then from there, we probably get to 9 eventually as schools are able to get out of some contracts and drop some games that are already scheduled, all that good stuff. So that topic to me feels like it's probably not as important as everybody is making it out to be. But there is a much, much, much bigger issue at play here. And that is the topic that I think behind the scenes the SEC is trying to figure out. And that is, what is the future of NIL? What is the future of the portal? And how do we get this stuff under control? And it's interesting, right? Because I would say, listen, I think it goes without saying, you guys and girls know, I love college sports, staked my career on it. Yeah, we talk some NFL here or there, some NBA here or there. But for the most part, we talk mostly college sports on this show. And the number one question that I get asked by everybody, from people that work in college sports as coaches, administrators, whatever, straight down to fans, the number one question that I get asked constantly is, how do we get this all under control? Nobody is anti-NIL. Nobody is anti-transfer portal. But what everybody is anti is the chaos that is going on right now, where you have NIL in a form of pay for play, and not only pay for play, but frankly, deceitful pay for play. Schools are offering this, but they're not delivering. Players are being guaranteed this, but they're not delivering. Players are leaving and not getting what they're promised when they get to campus. Some schools are more advanced with their collectives. Some schools aren't. Some schools have 2, 3, 4 collectives fighting. It's chaos in the streets. And oh, by the way, you know what else is chaos? How about the portal? Nobody is anti-portal. Nobody is saying that players, once you sign on the dotted line, you should be stuck there forever. But forcing players or allowing players, I should say, to just be able to leave whenever they want, that isn't good either. And it's not just for all the cliche, boring, oh, it's about competition and stick it out. No, there are real issues. One, it's unfair to your teammates. It's unfair to the coaches, all that stuff. It's also in many ways unfair to you for all the reasons we've discussed previously, including graduation rates, this, that, the other thing. When you go to 3 or 4 schools in a 4-year period, sometimes you're not going to be able to get out of there with a degree. So it's just, it's chaos right now and it's not sustainable. And so I bring it up and I'm bringing it back to the SEC for this reason. That is the number one question that I get. How do we get this all under control? And I've had one very simple answer over the last couple months, last couple years, really, as this is all unfolded. I have said consistently, I don't know if I've ever said it on this show, but behind the scenes, I've talked to people and I've said, look, there is only one way to get NIL and portal under control. It is to make student athletes employees of their schools. I'm not saying I like it. I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not saying that's what I want. And I'm not saying I'm smart enough to figure out all the intricacies of it. That's what lawyers are for. But that is the only way to get things under control, to get everyone on the same page, to keep NIL under control, portal under control, tampering under control. And I'll tell you this, it's starting to sound like SEC coaches agree with me. A lot of them had a lot to say on this topic. First of all, Hugh Freeze, new Auburn coach, friend of the Aaron Torres pod. This is what he said. I just love this line because it's straight and to the point. He said, we are the NFL right now. We just don't have player contracts. Nick Saban gave more of a long, eloquent answer, but he said, I'm going to give you the long version of what he said. He said, I would certainly agree that there are some challenges that the current situation that we're in presents. In terms of amateur athletics, NIL is a good thing for players. They have a way to make money. But when it turns into pay for play, then you're now getting into a different area. I think when you start talking about players being employees, unions, now you're getting paid for something. So now you have to pay taxes. We probably invest $85,000 to $100,000 on each player that we have, whether it's academic support, tutoring programs. There's a tremendous investment made in player development, not only football-wise, but academically as well as personally. He continued, but he ended by saying this. If that's what you want, let's unionize it. Let's make it just like the NFL. And so listen, I know that a lot of you are listening, driving around, at the gym, listening on YouTube, listening on podcasts. And I'm here to tell you, I don't think this is really what anybody wants. And remember, Nick Saban in that speech gave the whole, is this what you want college sports to be? But I'll be blunt, I don't really see a way that we go in any other direction going forward, and let me explain why. If we do not make players employees, all we're going to do is keep going down this path towards collectives. And one of the big topics that I give credit, the coaches were talking about this on the record in front of media over the course of this week in Destin. They just said it's crazy. And what is, I guess you would say, unfair about it is that everybody plays by a little bit of a different set of rules under the current structure. And I'm not saying feel bad for Nick Saban, and I'm not saying this school's definitively paying this and this school's not paying that. What I am saying is if you leave it up to individual schools and individual states, you get completely different parameters for completely different schools. So as an example, we've talked about it a lot, but think about, like, I'll use an example. Ross Dellinger, who I've referenced quite a bit, really great reporter for Sports Illustrated. He put out an article a few days ago basically explaining how the way the law is written in Texas, essentially Texas and Texas A&M can use their school administration, their school fundraising arm to funnel money into their collectives. That is not illegal because by state law, they are following the rules. I saw this. How about this in Missouri? A new state law in Missouri. And I hope I'm not boring you. I'm just trying to tell you what your administration, your school, your coaches are dealing with. In Missouri, there is now a state law that says that if you are a Missouri high school athlete and you're committed to a state school, you can collect NIL. So obviously, huge advantage for Eli Drinkwitz, huge advantage for Dennis Gates, the basketball coach, in that players can now start getting paid as high schoolers, but only if they commit to Missouri. They commit to Kentucky. They commit to Illinois. If they commit to whomever, fill in the blank, Ohio State, Penn State, they can't get paid, but they can if they go to Missouri. And so when you hear Nick Saban talk about this, when you hear Hugh Freeze talk about this, when you hear all of these coaches talk about this, they're not saying this is what they want, but they're saying this is what we need. Get players under contract. By the way, the contracts will protect the players too. So this isn't all let's defend the old guy that's making $9 million a year as a football coach. That's not what I'm saying at all. Contracts are going to protect the players too. If they're guaranteed a base salary, if you will, of 150 or 200 or whatever the number is, they're going to go ahead and get it. They're going to go ahead and get it because they will be under contract. They will have a union. They will be protected. But so will the schools, so that every offseason they can't they don't have to re-recruit their players. They don't have to worry about tampering. They don't have to worry about somebody coming in and stealing players with a higher NIL bid that may or may not be legit. I'm not saying it's perfect. And to be clear, I'll take it a step further. I'm not even saying it's what I would love in a perfect world, but I don't see things changing. It's the same with the portal. Keep in mind, players are going in 2, 3, 4 times. I know the NCAA says that they're going to try to limit it. You can only go in once as an undergrad. Good luck with that. Somebody's going to lawyer up and they're going to be playing next year if they want to. And so I just bring it up to say, I'm not saying this is what I want, and I don't know how it's all going to work out. To be clear, I'm not a lawyer. Don't claim to be. But I believe in the very foreseeable future, probably sooner than you think, at the very least, football players, maybe men's basketball players, will be employees of the school. Not saying it's a perfect solution, but I think it's the only realistic solution on what's going on right now.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Speaking of things that might be coming a little bit quicker than we think, I now want to switch gears to the Big 12. Because while obviously the SEC meetings are taking center stage, and I get it, right? The SEC is home to the big brands, Alabama, Georgia, LSU, the iconic head coaches, Kirby Smart, probably getting there. I don't know if he's an icon yet, but you get the point. Nick Saban, Brian Kelly, maybe one day will be a national championship winning coach. But while the SEC has the big brands and the big names and the highest paid coaches, I would argue what's going to happen or what is going to at least be discussed at the Big 12's league meetings this week is actually going to be more interesting. Why is that? It is because you have a conference that we know they want to expand. Okay, so for people, I think everybody knows, but the Big 12 this year will actually have 14 teams because Texas and Oklahoma are in the league, but they will soon leave, all while Cincinnati, Houston, BYU, and Central Florida are coming in. But what's wild is the Big 12, with their new commissioner, Brett Yormark, has made no secret about it. He wants to expand. He wants to expand quickly, and he wants to expand fearlessly. So he has a conference that reigns from coast to coast. So we know the Big 12 wants to expand. They're not hiding it. But what I think is more interesting that not enough people are probably talking about, they're courting schools that are very much kind of on a tight time clock here, okay? I don't think people, like we overblow so much in the media in 2023, 2024, this time of year, this time of life. Yet somehow the Big 12 pursuing all these schools as their deadlines approach is somehow being underreported. Because if they plan on poaching schools from the Pac-12, the Pac-12 TV deal expires a year from now. The Pac-12 is trying to put together a TV deal. They got to make moves, the Big 12, on these Pac-12 schools soon before a deal comes into place. We've talked previously about UConn. UConn is in the Big East. The Big East is renegotiating its TV deal right now, and their current TV deal expires after the 2024-2025 school year. And also San Diego State, which we've talked about as well. At least some cursory interest from the Big 12. Well, how about this? San Diego State has to make a decision on its future, whether it's the Pac-12, the Big 12, or staying in the Mountain West, before June 30th. This month, June 30th. Because if not, they have a $30 million payment that would be owed to the Mountain West. So we know the Big 12 wants to expand. We know things have to happen quickly. And this week, I don't know if it's all going to come out this week, but I think it's going, things are moving behind the scenes. I expect things to happen very quickly, and I expect some decisions to be made in the next couple weeks. And I think we might be looking at a different future to college sports in the Big 12 and across college sports with the shakeup that could happen. But I'll also say this, from what I'm hearing, I spent the last couple days working the phones, talking to anybody who would talk to me, listening to other people. I think the realignment might happen a little bit different than I expected. Here's what we know right now, or at least we think we know. I think Colorado is headed to the Big 12, okay? So Dennis Dodd of CBS reported this week that the two sides have had substantive talks, including in-person talks. This came on the heels of Barry Trammell, a reporter out of Oklahoma. Remember, Oklahoma State is in the Big 12. He, a few days ago, put out a report that basically said that he believes that Colorado is, quote, ready to commit to joining the Big 12 soon. So Colorado, all signs are pointing towards Colorado going to the Big 12. And what I could tell you and what I have heard independently is that there are two big reasons that Colorado is pushing so aggressively towards the Big 12. And both of them come from one man, and his name is Deion Sanders. Okay. So we all know that Coach Prime is now at Colorado. And my understanding is that this is something that not only Deion endorses, Deion is actively pushing, and all you got to do is kind of follow the tea leaves here. Where Deion's from Florida, but he spent most of his adult life in the Dallas area. in Texas, still has a home in Texas, which he spends time at when he's not, you know, either at Jackson State in previous years or Colorado. So he still has ties to Texas. He wants to recruit Texas. He knows all the high school coaches. And so he is actively pushing for Colorado, the Big 12. And I think Colorado is kind of, believe it or not, at the behest of Deion Sanders. It sounds crazy. He just got there. He hasn't coached a game yet. But my understanding talking to people is they kind of get like, if Deion doesn't work, we're kind of out of options. Like we need Deion to work either to build us into a football power or to elevate this program so that if he leaves for another job, it's a good job for somebody else to take. Well, how do you elevate a football program? It starts with simple dollars and cents, something that Colorado doesn't have a lot of right now. So to pay Deion, to pay his assistant coaches, to maybe, and I know schools in most cases can't really be involved with NIL, to get NIL where it needs to be, you need more money. You need more big games. You need more marquee matchups. And so Deion is pushing it, and the schools, I believe, support it. What's interesting, though, and if you pay attention to anything, listen to this, because I'm going to give you some information I don't know that you'll get anywhere else. I think the sands are starting to turn in terms of who might join Colorado in the Big 12, okay? I don't think anything's official yet, but for weeks and months and maybe even a year or so at this point, I think the tea leaves have indicated that if anybody leaves for the Big 12 from the Pac-12, it would be those four corner schools. It would be Colorado, which we just discussed, Utah, Arizona, and Arizona State. Well, over the last couple of days, I have kind of gotten the indication that that might not be as concrete as a lot of people think. On the one hand, I was under the impression that Arizona and Arizona State were working in conjunction. They were working together, and everything that one school did, the other school was going to do with it. Kind of like how when the Big 12 a million years ago in the 2010-2011 range, if you remember at that time, Oklahoma and Oklahoma State were tied together at the hip, and some of the Texas schools were tied together at the hip. I bring it up because in recent days, I have heard and I have learned that Arizona and Arizona State might not be as tied together as people think. Arizona State, really, as weird as it sounds, I don't know that they prioritize athletics. Their school president is not a sports guy at all. Remember, he's the guy that signed off on Herm Edwards, kept Herm Edwards around forever, whatever. And the AD, not good at his job. Just going to say it. Not good at his job. Look at his history, whatever. So with that said, I don't know that Arizona is really in the crosshairs of the Big 12. And I'll take it a step further. I've actually heard varying things on Utah, that Utah might not be interested in the Big 12 because who is in the Big 12 right now? Their cross-state rivals, BYU. Now, I think you'd be crazy to stick around in the Pac-12, but I get the sense that Utah isn't too keen on going to a conference where their biggest rival is. Remember, these two sides did not get along when they were both in the Mountain West. They play a rivalry called the Holy War. And I know there are some religious connotations to that, but I get the sense that those two schools are not excited to be in the same league, and Utah, with the perception that they would be quote unquote following BYU to the Big 12. Not saying that's how I would perceive it, but I think that's how some people in Utah do. And so my understanding is those four corner schools are no longer a priority for the Big 12. And that the Big 12 has essentially shifted its interests. And it shifted its interest to schools that we have talked about on the show a lot. UConn, Gonzaga, and San Diego State. I'm not saying all of them. I still think Arizona, by the way, from the Pac-12 would be in the mix. So a Colorado and Arizona, and then maybe a UConn and either a Gonzaga or San Diego State. That is my understanding of where the Big 12 wants to go. And let me explain why. One, it solidifies something that Brett Yormark has talked about quite a bit, which he wants a coast-to-coast, corner-to-corner conference, right? I mean, this is what the Big Ten did from L.A. to Piscataway, New Jersey. And Brett Yormark has been very public about, we want to be in all four time zones because that is what's best for our TV partners. We can play noon Eastern kickoffs in football. And then we could play the 10:30 kickoffs kickoffs in football at BYU. But then in basketball, we can also provide inventory if Gonzaga or San Diego State is in the mix. Beyond that, Big 12 officials have been very public about, we think that basketball is undervalued. And I know it sounds crazy, right? I know a lot of you are going to sit there and say, like, Torres, it's all about TV, is all about football, this, that, the other thing. Well, a couple things stand out to me. One, and we talked about this previously with Gonzaga. Remember, the Big 12 TV deal is unique. ESPN has exclusive rights to the SEC. The Big 10 is Fox, CBS, and NBC, okay? The Big 12, going forward, is going to be with both ESPN and Fox. So I bring it up because you can sit here and say, basketball doesn't matter. Well, guess who needs late-night inventory? ESPN and Fox. So that would make the TV partners happy. And here's the other thing, and this is my understanding of the thinking within the Big 12, is yes, football is a priority and it's always going to be number one and nothing's going to come second. But we believe in a 12-team playoff era, we're going to have teams good enough. With TCU making the national championship games last year, Kansas State, Baylor, we have a competitive football product. But now, if we can put together the best basketball conference in America, football's always going to be king. But whatever the future of college sports looks like, if we have the best basketball conference, if we have, say, Gonzaga and UConn and Arizona, and I'm not saying any of them are 100%, but if we have those three schools or sub in San Diego State for Gonzaga or whatever, then whatever the future of college sports looks like, we're going to have to be included. Because if in 10 years or 5 years, the ACC breaks up and the Big Ten grabs a few schools and the SEC grabs a few schools and both are at 20 and what, and they're trying to break off and do their own thing, well, you can't host a legitimate national championship in basketball if Kansas isn't involved, which we know is in the Big 12. And if UConn and Gonzaga and Arizona. So if we build the best basketball conference that's ever existed from coast to coast, corner to corner, we can't be squeezed out of whatever the future of college sports is. And so my understanding is right now that's the thinking. And listen, I'm not here to say that anything is 100% set in stone. And if those four corner schools committed today, I don't know what that means. But my understanding is the tides have started to shift. There is interest in schools. Let me put it this way. I think there are some schools that maybe the league is more interested in than are out there publicly. San Diego State, UConn, Gonzaga probably as well. And I think there are some schools that maybe they're not as interested in. Arizona State, Utah, etc. Keep that in your back pocket because I'm here to tell you, no one else is giving you that information. And in 2 or 3 weeks, if I look smart, remember that Torres told you. All right, I think that's it for this episode of the Air Tour Sports Podcast. I'll tell you guys and girls, I think that was one of the most important shows we ever did. Again, we talked the small picture of college basketball and the draft deadline, but we also talked the big picture of realignment and what the future of college sports looks like as well. And I'll be blunt, I don't think you're getting that content from anyone else anywhere in college sports. So proud of what this show has become and all of the support that you guys and girls give me. So do me a favor. If you're not subscribed, please make sure to do so. Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, Google Music, wherever you listen to podcasts, make sure to subscribe. Also, make sure to rate and review the show. By the way, tag me, tell a friend, tweet at me. Let people know how good this show is and how important it is for the college sports ecosystem. I don't think any show in America is giving you what I just gave you. Subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. Follow on YouTube, by the way. We're closing in on 23,000 subscribers on YouTube. It's going to be awesome. That's all for today's show. It is time for me to get out of here. We will probably do a quick Friday show. And by the way, if you missed any shows this week, remember, Caleb Love Reaction on Wednesday. Tuesday had it was a big, great show. So make sure you subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. But for now, it's time for me to get out of here. Shout out to Torrin Craig. Shout out to Rachel, who hates my voice. Shout out to JJ Redick, you F-head. Unblock me, bro. I will be back on Friday for episode week of the Aaron Torres Pod. Did AT do it again, baby? Or did AT do it again? I'll be back. We'll talk, people.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.